Well, did you spring forward? Did you fall back? One time, when I was about 19 years old, I got it confused in the fall, and I set my clock ahead an hour instead of back, and then I showed up 2 hours early for any event. Oh, man. And it's always a hassle for me. I bet it's a hassle for you. It's a hassle for a lot of people, this changing. Is it any good for us? And we got some really interesting thoughts, I think, today from our next guest, Rochelle Wilson-Tolomar, our guest, a lecturer in Spanish Environmental Cultural Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's an enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation. And she has some thoughts about how to look at this whole business of daylight savings time and not, and our biological clocks, and how that might relate to our environment. And I'm wondering, as I talk with her, I hope you'll join in. How do you feel about daylight savings time? How does it affect you? You can give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email to talk@wpr.org. And Rochelle Wilson-Tolomar, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled to talk about this with everybody.
Yeah. You know, we turn back our clocks an hour for daylight savings time. We spring ahead. We fall back. We get an extra hour of sleep in the fall, maybe. But why do we do that?
Right? You know, it is interesting because when you look at it from the biological perspective, which I wrote in this article, as far as we know, we are the only species to do this. We are the only ones who attempt to override our natural biological presets in an attempt to extend our workday. No other being does this. They eat, they sleep, they reproduce according to their own biological rhythms. Instead of us leaning into that, you know, making our economy fit nature, we try to make nature obey our economy. And in doing so, we forget that our bodies are not expressions of capitalism. We're expressions of nature. And this article brings us back to that through indigenous knowledges.
It's a really interesting article that you've written. Yeah, we are the only species. I guess it started, is it true that it started way back in the farm days when it was thought to give farmers more time to work in the fields and so forth?
You know, whenever I was writing this article, it was actually pretty difficult to figure out exactly where it came from. There were all sorts of debates, but what I took away from this was almost all of the debates that I read, including this one that you mentioned, they're very productivity and profit-based. It's all about how do we extract maximum productivity out of not only people, but out of nature? How can we work the land more? And in that, I wanted to add a different argument. You know, a lot of us have feelings about daylight saving time. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Some people dread it. And I thought, okay, this opens up a space for us to have an additional conversation, and one that's more ecologically based. And that's where I tried to turn it.
Yeah, and it's a different, the indigenous ecological perspective is different.
It is. And I was really bothered that I had never really heard this side before. And it always struck me as, this is so strange that we try to change nature. Why was that the logical thing that we chose to do?
So what are we overlooking here? I mean, if the natural world provides needs longer periods of darkness, I think is what you're saying, doesn't that mean that the rest of the people do as well?
Right. Right. What are we missing? When you look at daylight saving time, it's tempting to think it's just a technical adjustment. 1 hour back, 1 hour forward. But really, when you look at it and you try to break down the logic, you can see that it's a cultural statement that speaks to the way we humans interact with our environment, with time, and with nature. And what we're missing is that in indigenous knowledges, those interactions are based in harmony and are based in balance. when you look at daylight saving times, it is based in prioritizing work over well-being and profits over rest. We are completely missing that point.
And so, as in the indigenous area, the thought is work less in those times of the... I'm trying to wrap my head around what you're getting.
Right. So I guess there's a philosophical aspect to it when you talk about work. So what does it mean in indigenous communities about work? That is where the big friction comes in. In indigenous traditional economies, work is much more expansive. It means there's essentially one sphere. All the work that is done, that being caring for people, caring for the land, caring for young children, that's all equally valued as work. And that's because the purpose of an indigenous economy is the well-being of all. In all meaning, all humans and all the earth. However, so on the flip side, when you look at daylight saving time, its objective is to increase profits, and its objective is to aid a very particular type of worker, one that works from 9 to 5. Certainly, that worker has more daylight. That is true. Some workers, through daylight saving time, are pushed more into the light, and others are pushed more into the dark because we have a very exclusive vision of what work is. You know, for example, on Sunday morning, I got up at 4:45 with my children. I was further in the dark. I didn't get extra daylight hours. And that, you know, is a type of work that's not honored in our economy.
Yeah.
On the flip side, my husband has what you would think of as, you know, real work, the paid work, the salaried work. His job was also not considered in daylight saving time. He works 24-hour shifts once every 7 days. And without fail, like 7 of the last 8 years, his shift has fallen on daylight saving time.
Oh.
So he has worked an extra hour in the dark. And you think, okay, big deal, one extra hour. I stay an hour extra at my job occasionally. Will you do that and tell me how you feel on your 25th hour in the dark? It doesn't feel so good. So my point is that, you know, we don't think of everybody. We're creating social imbalance. We're creating ecological imbalance. And it opens a space to have a conversation of, okay, what could we do? What would allow for more balance? Maybe working less during days that have less daylight, you know, instead of trying to maintain this linear expression of work where we work the same number of hours, we're constantly available, we're constantly output. And in an indigenous community, there would be more room for cyclical changes. Maybe we work a little less here, a little more there. That's more typical of our natural rhythms, to have cycles. And yet we, you know, sort of obsess as a culture to try to keep up productivity and keep going no matter what and infinitely increase.
Gary in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Gary, hi.
Hi there. I'm calling because I have always dreaded the day when we have to set the clocks back an hour, because that means, you know, it's pitch black at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I have seasonal affective disorder. And so, you know, that made it even worse. I should add, I'm retired. And I set my own schedule, obviously. So this year, it finally dawned on me, there's a law that says we have to set the clocks back. So I didn't. My own little act of personal protest. I'm still an hour ahead of everybody else.
How does it feel?
And I am loving it, especially at 5 o'clock in the afternoon when I look out and it's still nice and bright and sunny.
Gary, I love that. So what do you think, Rochelle?
I think we all have our versions of protest. And yours, it sounds lovely. Mine was writing and trying to spark some debate about this of why do we do this? And do we even want to do this? What kind of future are we creating when our concept of time values the market instead of our lives?
Gary, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. I love that. I love your thoughts on that. Hey, you're retired. You just live on your own clock. I actually thought about the big changes, and people are now working more from home. that this can make a difference in people's lives, those who work at home, because you don't, all right, maybe you need to work 8 hours, but you can adjust those hours a bit.
Right. There's definitely more flexibility for certain types of workers. I worked remotely this past semester as a lecturer for UW, and yeah, I could have arranged where I caught up on my work later in the day. But, you know, many workers in our economy don't have that choice. For example, there's an entire economy dedicated to supporting the 9-to-5 workers. You can think about the food industry. They're getting up an hour early to make, you know, their profits earlier as workers are getting their, maybe getting a coffee earlier. Transportation workers, working the bus, working trains, they're up earlier. They can't benefit from any sort of remote type of work, which once again goes back to this practice is very exclusive in what type of work it's acknowledging and what type of work it's helping. It helps some and it hurts others.
I can tell you the same holds true for radio hosts.
You do have a schedule.
We have a schedule and we have to, I can't show up an hour late for the radio show.
No.
Or an hour early.
No, you cannot. And I guess that's why we've invented things like fluorescent lights and caffeine. We attempt to override our natural need for rest, however possible, besides resting.
Dennis in Two Rivers, we'll go to you now. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, thanks, Larry. I suppose this could be a question for Jamie Nack also, but as far as when I remember about the height of the pandemic, some of the wildlife would move further into the urban and suburban areas. So I wonder when there are changes where people are commuting or shopping differently, does that possibly change how close animals get to homes and roads?
Yeah, I have, I guess, an anecdotal response to that. And I live in Minneapolis, and I drove into Madison for this interview. It is a straight, boring drive in which I normally remember nothing about it. However, this time I was struck, I guess pun intended, by how many deer were on the side of the road that had been hit. And when I stopped for gas, I read a headline about how there are more deer collisions after daylight saving time, because obviously nature doesn't get the memo that our rhythms have moved earlier into the dawn. And that's an ecological impact there. I think I counted 6 or 7 on my drive.
Well, there was a report, a research done by Environment Colorado that in their work, they found that collisions between motor vehicles and deer increase 16% in the week following the spring and fall time changes.
So they need a week to adjust and learn that we've changed too, I guess.
So an amazing, amazing number. Tim in New Berlin emailed to say that every study proves that children do better in school when they can sleep when they were meant to. And daylight savings time disrupts a child's education. Sounds like you would probably agree with that.
I was going to say this fits almost perfectly into my argument. And to bring it back to what this comment gets us to, according to Indigenous knowledges, something that is quite pervasive in our culture is that we view ourselves as completely separate and superior from nature, which is what fuels practices like daylight saving time, where we view that we can do something that is not coherent with our nature. Indigenous knowledges could be like illustrated more so by a circle. We view humans as just a mere point on that circle, just in the same way as a tree or water, air. We are an equal part of nature. And like these children who need to rest, reminding ourselves that we're a part of nature would bring us back to more natural, more restful rhythms, including, you know, how it plays out in education. I did teach last semester at UW a course on culture and environment and economy. And something that we talked about consistently was how our culture believes we're separate from nature. We view nature as something way out there that we can travel to, maybe a park that's fenced in, maybe a mountain to go visit, we forget that our bodies are expressions of nature. They are not expressions of capitalism. And when I had a group presenting at the end of the semester and they said, okay, class, draw a picture of nature. I was the only person in that room to include a human in my image. And these are ecologically conscientious students that are taking my course. It is so pervasive, this belief that we are separate, that indigenous knowledges tend to intercede and remind us that we are a part of the grander ecology. And that goes back to this commentator's point mm-hmm. that children need to rest more too.
Michael emailed to say, without clocks, we couldn't have daylight savings time.
Yes.
Yet the amount of daylight remains the same.
Yes.
So daylight savings time, he's agreeing with you, he says, is a product of capitalism.
I mean,
we kind of invented, time is this, clocks, or, you know, we invented them.
Right. With the inception of capitalism and the invention of the clock, they kind of worked together in the sense that it suddenly became possible to measure and manage worker productivity, and it just simply wasn't possible before that. As a result, this new logic has arisen out of, you know, the clock and capitalism, and that logic is infinite extraction, both of, you can see that the way we treat our earth, what we take from it without limits, and what we expect from our workers to be constantly available, to be constantly outputting, and to not rest. The clock in capitalism, what you have to think about in not just daylight saving times, but it's a logic, and this logic is copy-pasted across small practices and large practices. And it's all about looking at that logic and seeing how it's incompatible with nature, which is what I do in this article, showing how daylight saving time is just one practice that we probably need to reevaluate and realign with nature.
Do you think that's possible? Do you think we're going to be able to do that?
I would love if it were possible. I do believe the first step is having conversations about it. And that conversation should probably revolve around what kind of future do we want and what kind of economy could make that future happen.
So we need an economy that values rest as much as productivity, perhaps.
Right, right.
Or care as much as profit.
Exactly. I think we need an economy that works for all. And I use the word all in the indigenous sense, meaning all expressions of human, not just a particular type of human doing a certain type of work. And all, meaning all the earth. What kind of economy can, you know, take in the social and ecological costs as well? We tend to measure economies by GDP only. We look at profit only. And it excludes the social and ecological side. There are other ways of looking at economies. A lot of scholars across fields have debated, well, why do we use the GDP? Shouldn't we use, for example, the general well-being, which takes into account how people are doing, how the earth is doing? For instance, if we use that mode of measurement, what we consider a developed nation, that list, it would look totally different. Which countries are considered the best if we used a different model of measurement?
Jim in Winnebago County has something for us. Jim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Well, I have a couple things to say. One is that clocks are an artificial construct of humans. And so unless we are going to actually just let our natural rhythms go and not use clocks, this is sort of an interesting topic, but it's not going to go anywhere. Personally, I like daylight saving time a lot. Now, I'm not part of the economy because I'm retired, but I really appreciate being able to spend as much time in the evening outdoors during the summer when the days are longest anyway. And I do agree that there is too much emphasis and maybe negative emphasis on educational clocks and that it may actually cause problem for learning. I know that as a student and even as a faculty member, I didn't particularly like 8 o'clock morning classes or 7:45s either. But the fact of the matter is that we all do live by clocks, and the proposal that we just stay on daylight saving time forever is just actually kicking the can down the road anyway. So I favor it. I like it, and I hope it stays just as it is.
You bring up a good. You said something. It's not going anywhere, and while I hear what you're saying, this discussion about daylight saving time does connect to a grander conversation about cultures of overwork. If you look, for instance, in Spain, they recently passed a law called the Right to Disconnect, where it's now illegal to contact your workers outside of work hours. They are not required to be available via email or Zoom or whatnot. You could look at Iceland. They piloted a 4-day work week. They are going to stick with the 4-day work week because they found that it worked better for them. There are ways of adjusting our culture of overwork. And I do think that we are going somewhere. I think this is a conversation that unifies people who believe they need more rest and more balance in their lives.
Well, so I think many states, not Wisconsin, but many states, nearly every other state, I think, has acted to end daylight savings time. What do you think about replacing it with permanent standard time? Does that make any difference? As you're describing and talking about it?
I mean, I would be an advocate for it. I would love if we stopped trying to manipulate nature in small and big ways like this, for sure.
So in the end, what's your takeaway here?
My takeaway is that if we stopped trying to bend nature and make nature obey the economy, I believe that we could not only find more rest, but find more meaning, find more sustainability, find a more desirable future for ourselves and for the next generation.
So we should take a look at what others are doing, other countries maybe?
Why not, right? I would love a 4-day work week.
Well, I guess it would be hard for me to get think that way because of the show that I do.
Well,
it would be hard.
Yeah, I mean, going from one way of life to another way of life always requires a big adjustment, and I think thinking about that is step one, and implementation is step two.
Well, it involves a lot of conversation to change minds in that fashion.
Absolutely.
You would agree with that?
Absolutely.
On that note, here we are out of time, and there were some other callers. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but Rochelle, it's been a pleasure talking
with
you.
It has been a pleasure. I'm so happy to see Indigenous knowledge being mainstream.
Rochelle Wilson Tolomar. Our guest, lecturer in Spanish Environmental Cultural Studies at the UW-Madison and enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation. It was fun to look at this from a different perspective. Fun for me, and I hope it was fun for you. And we're going to continue our show. Of course, we're not going anywhere. We'll be talking about some really cool research on truffles. You know, we spend a lot of money on truffles when we go to the restaurant or at the grocery store. We have them growing right here in Wisconsin. Did you know that? We'll find out about the research going on next. I'm Larry Mueller.